Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Robbing and shooting and raping and killing. Bloody murder more or less than running airplanes into buildings. Every time I turn around.
Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. You can email Rick at rustysatellite@gmail.com or check out his website, louisvilleky.com. Rick's Twitter is @RickyRedding. Now get ready. Here's Rick.
We've got a big show here for you, our third edition of the Rusty Satellite Show here on Louisville.am. And we're kind of a little giddy around here. I'm broadcasting here in with a live studio audience of one. And that's Dan Vonderhyde, who's the guy in charge of Louisville.am, featured today. We're podcasting on July 9th, featured today in the Courier-Journal in a really cool article about this whole enterprise. And I'd like to mention that if you're tuning in just for the Rusty Satellite Show, there's plenty of other programs. There's a new show every day on Louisville.am, and you ought to check them out. Dan has his own show. And there's one for that Stephanie White does on Louisville Family Fun. There is a sports show called The Crunch Zone, one about food and dining called Deliciously Louisville, and, of course, the Rusty Satellite Show. So let's get on with it today. I have two great guests today. One is known as the Captain, J.K. McKnight of the Forecastle Festival. You get a chance to learn a lot more about what's going on with Forecastle with J.K., and my other guest is the newest anchor in town, Wave TV's Shannon Cogan, who has been on the air just a few weeks. She has come to our city from Miami, where she was a top anchor in that number 16 market. And now she has a history here in Louisville, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But right now, I want to get to my interview with J.K. McKnight. Now, if you don't know about Forecastle, you've been living under a rock or haven't been in Louisville, but it's a lot more than just a music festival. If you want to hear about the other parts, the Forecastle Festival is about activism and art and music. And the music gets most of the attention, but in my conversation with J.K., I talked a little bit about the other things. It's amazing that only 11 years ago, the Forecastle Festival was 40 people down at Tyler Park. This year, he's expecting up to 75,000, with people from every state in the union will be coming here to Forecastle for the three-day festival this weekend at Waterfront Park. So there's a lot more to say about Forecastle, but I'll let J.K. do it. Here's my interview. I went down to see him at Waterfront Park Plaza, where he has is borrowing an office and looking over the scene there. It was a great, great environment, and was happy to have a conversation with J.K. All right, I'm here with J.K. McKnight, the founder and head guy. What do they call you, Captain?
Captain.
The Captain of Forecastle. Yeah. It's great to have you here on the Rusty Satellite Show. It is Monday before the show. We're here high atop the Waterfront Park in Waterfront Park Place, where J.K. is doing a lot of those last-minute planning things, and as you said to me, reflecting a little bit on the 11-year history of this event. Tell me how it got started and what came to your mind to create this.
Absolutely. Well, like most things, it started with an idea. I don't think I ever, when I first started, really even thought of it as a business. It was just more something I wanted to do in the summertime to kind of get my friends together and kind of have a local musician camaraderie event. Really, I'd been living in South Carolina, going to school, and I just moved back, so I was looking to do something to kind of reconnect myself into the Louisville music roots, you could say.
Okay, but it really evolved very quickly into much more than that. What was the first year like?
Simplistic. Unlike it is now. Yeah, simplistic, very pure. You know, there were six bands that played. I remember I think Fire the Saddle played, and my band played, and my drummer's band played, and I think Blue Goat War played.
And grand audience of how many?
Probably no more than 30 or 40 people. There's probably more musicians there watching each other, you know, more right. participants in the event than there were actual people that came to it, which is funny because today there probably isn't a week that goes by that someone sees me and says, oh, you know, I was at the very first one, or you
right.
know, I was there. And I was like,
oh. And you know the 30 people, and you know
the. I was about to say, if you weren't a musician performing at the event or a homeless person, then you probably weren't there.
Right.
Or my direct family, one of the others, since they lived right above the park. But
And it was held at
Tyler Park, yeah.
Tyler
Park. It was at Tyler Park for 3 years. You know, the whole Olmsted influence is very real to me, and something that kind of helped inspire the vision of the festival. And, you know, I think that first year was just such a great experience, even though it was so simple and nonprofit and everything else. You know, made me want to do it again and kind mm-hmm. of push the envelope a little bit the second year, see what we could get away with. And, you know, second year we added the art and activism components to it. And that's really when it kind of exploded. I mean, it
kind of became a business.
It really, well, not a business. It wouldn't become business for years later. But it's when I really saw the potential of it. We noticed we had the same budget that year, which is, I mean, probably was like, you know, $750 or $1,000 or something. But we noticed that the audience tripled that year. And we really hadn't done any new marketing or anything like that, but we had added two components to the festival that weren't there a year before. And we isolated it down pretty quick, but that was the reason that it was successful, was that that of those components. So I feel like I kind of knew we had something that year with this music art activism format. And creating a kind of a new festival model where you had these three cultural mediums, but they were all represented equally at the event. So one element wasn't kind of off to the side. They were all integrated together. We started marketing it that way too, which no one had done. You know, you never saw a festival with, you know, a bunch of, you know, environmental organizations up along the same line as like some bigger music artists. It hadn't really happened to that point. At that time too, and people quickly forget that during the early 2000s, you know, the activism, environmentalism, that stuff wasn't very mainstream yet.
Right, you know, right. And I wanted to ask you, and I want to get right back to that, but first of all, from 30 or 40 people, how many, give us an idea of the size that it is now. How many people you expect maybe this
year? We expect up to 75,000 people this year. Last year we had sales in 48 states, 1,243 cities. 7 different countries. I look for all those numbers to go up this year. Hopefully we'll get all 50 states this year. I think it was like Wyoming or something that didn't buy a ticket last year. I don't know if they have against Louisville.
We'll have to get out tomorrow.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's interesting. You know, somebody like me, you know, I'm not cool or anything. I'll be honest with you, I've heard of maybe two or three of the bands, and all the publicity that I hear is about the bands, but I'd like to ask you about the other two components and how they play a role, and give me a reason to come down here if I'm not into the music.
Right. I think the biggest sales point of it is that it's incredibly unique, authentic event that you don't find anywhere else. I mean, it's a nautically themed music art activism festival, you know, in between the Midwest and South, like the, you know, doesn't exist, you know, so mm-hmm. it's not out there. So it's a very, you know, we built on the format that started, you know, over a decade ago, and it's still coming together. I mean, I really feel every year is just an incremental step to getting towards this grand vision of what this thing could be, and every year we're getting closer and closer to making that happen.
Ultimate would be what?
I don't know if I can explain the ultimate in like a sentence or two. It's more of a vision of having something that really is a transformative event, something that takes you completely out of your world and puts you in a world that we created, you know, where everything you look at is you know, it's almost like when the Wrigley Circus used to come through, like New York City, you know, mm-hmm. they march up and they create this giant circus, and the circus arrives and then it's gone, you know. We're very much the same way, except we're not a circus, we're a nautically themed arc of all, you know, music, art, activism. So it's
it's nautically themed. There's not a bunch of boats involved or anything, but
there'll be lots of boats on site. Yeah, there'll be huge installations. It's you know, we put a lot of effort, a lot of you know, energy into atmosphere.
Okay,
it's really important. It's one of those things that a lot of promoters, you know, totally overlook. They just think of the kind of bread and butter elements and not the environment. To me, the environment's everything. You know, just like when we started in Olmsted Parks, the environment of those parks made the event. I mean, they were mm-hmm. an integral part of the event. You know, there's people today I know in Louisville who, you know, will always remember Forecastle 2005 at Cherokee Park. You know, I mean, it was such a magnificent 5-star event. I mean, I remember people coming up to me and saying, you know, it was the best event they had ever been to in their lives. If there was any day they could recreate, it would be that. And I wrote all this stuff down while I was there because I couldn't believe people were actually saying it. But it was. I mean, it was really amazing. And, you know, so I think the environment's an incredibly important part. And it's part of what makes this festival so authentic is we're, you know, in the middle of a major metropolitan area, but in a green space on the river, middle of downtown Louisville. You know, with this total nautical decor and decorative element that stretches, you know, into
and facet. Is it just help to remind people that they should do smart things for the environment, or is there any tangible things that come out of it?
Yeah, it's challenging. It's challenging, and that's something that we every year I feel like we learn and learn and learn, and we stick with it, and we get better.
It doesn't seem to be politicized at all.
No, and it used to be. I mean, it's again when we started it. People were really scared of it. Like, they had no idea what we were doing, and they were really scared of it. And then as it got more mainstream and, you know, turn on MSNBC and, it's, you know, there's green logos everywhere. I mean, it suddenly became more acceptable.
I remember, my memory is the year that Robert F. Kennedy spoke.
Yeah, 2008. So that was an example of one of the, you know, every year we tried to up the ante on everything, okay. on each element. And, you know, obviously Robert came in and gave, I think, one of the best speeches that I've ever heard on environmental law and in this whole region and what belongs to the citizens of Kentucky and what doesn't. It was really powerful.
Yeah, I remember it clearly as we're speaking here. But you know, the festival is a very big asset to the city of Louisville and... But I'm trying to imagine you did this, all this growth. You started when you were 20 years old.
Yeah.
And I've heard stories about how much you hustled in those early years selling sponsorships. Maybe you have a story.
No. I was thinking about it last night because, you know, things today are so delegated that it's, you know, I'm up here, you know, on the 11th floor of Waterfront Park Place, like managing a couple departments right now, whereas last year I was managing 19, which was a totally different world than today. And, yeah, I was thinking about that. I remember I have countless stories of, you know, like sleeping out on the Belvedere and like walking into a hotel, you know, a hotel room at the Gold House and being, you know, after a 19, 20 hour drive, you know, like they do on a crab boat, you know, it's like that, but unlike crab boaters, we get to do that for 2 or 3 days on end. We do it for, you know, 5 or 6, 7 days and then we get a rest. So I remember those times vividly and just how draining and emotionally, physically, and everything. It was incredible.
Well, it's a great event for the city. We got to wind it up here, JK, but maybe you could tell our audience a little bit about, you know, tell us the dates and how they should get involved.
Absolutely. It's this weekend, July 12th through the 14th, Waterfront Park. Tickets are still available. They're on our website. They'll also be available at the door. Got great after parties too aboard the Belle of Louisville and Palace Theater. All the information is at forecastlefest.com.
Okay, a big thank you to JK for talking with me down at downtown about the Forecastle Festival. I'm actually looking forward to going to some of the show. I hate to admit that I'm so old and uncool, but I wouldn't know any of the artists, except maybe if Grace Potter walked in the door here, I might know that she was a musician. But I understand it's really great music. I'm going to go out and experience some new stuff this weekend. So at this point in the show, we're going to turn it over to me, I guess, and talk about some of the issues going on in the city right now that have gotten my attention, some important news items. The first of which, a big announcement this week from Jefferson County Public Schools that they are raising the high school dropout rate. Now, to you and me and people that I know, it's sort of amazing that people actually don't make it through high school. But the fact is that there's a 4% dropout rate in Jefferson County. The dropout rate age is 18, and it is moving to 16, along with the rest of the state. There's a threshold of the number of school systems in the state at which point, as they adopt this rule, it'll be a period of time after enough of them have adopted the rule that it will be mandatory that throughout the state that the dropout rate will drop from 18 to 16. This has been an initiative begun in Frankfort. Governor Beshear is strongly behind it. And his wife has pushed for it, and it sounds on the surface like just a no-brainer. Certainly we should force 16- and 17-year-olds to stay in school, but I don't know. I guess there's an alternative way to look at it, and that is that people that do drop out, I Googled the phrase, why do people drop out of high school? And, you know, some of the main reasons were some were financial, some were because of drug issues, abuse issues. The people that do drop out of high school seem to have some serious problems. And in my opinion, it looks like some of the results of this rule will be that we spend a lot of time hunting down and prosecuting and chasing 16, 17-year-old kids and their parents who have chosen to drop out of school. There's only one sure thing about this law, and that is that JCPS will be hiring more truancy officers. And is it really the right thing for the entire state to spend its time chasing down dropouts and forcing them to go back to school? I'm not sure. I don't think I agree with it. But I did contact Debbie Westland, a member of the school board, and, you know, I give her a chance to respond. And when this came up, and if you don't mind, I'll just read what she sent back to me. She said, quote from Debbie Westland, "There is work to be done to ensure we provide the support necessary to keep all kids in school so that they get a diploma, the minimum requirement for getting a good job. The key issue is to raise expectations for schools, for families, and for kids that this goal is worth it, that it is a meaningful accomplishment. We already have a very important emphasis in JCPS toward this school, and that is to target high school freshmen, address their early struggles so they don't get in a cycle of failure that leads to loss of hope and to dropping out. Further, we're working through our career-themed schools to engage students in education toward careers that interest them." So, you know, I agree that it is a wonderful idea to make sure that every student that starts out in JCPS finishes with a high school diploma. It's just very difficult. One of the numbers in the paper was that last year, Courier Journal reported that 1,166 dropouts in JCPS, that 500 would have been pursued for truancy. So my question is, who's going to pursue these? Where are we going to get people to chase down 500 teenagers who've dropped out of school and force them to go back to school? And what will the prosecution be? Are we talking about fines, jail time for the parents? You know, it's hard to say. So, anyway, it's a very difficult issue, and one that we'll just see how it goes. But on a lighter note, and a brighter note, and a happier note, I guess. This week it was announced that Vermont American Building downtown would soon become a distillery. It's right across from the ballpark, from Slugger Field down there. It's going to be called the Angels Envy Distillery. One of the investors, as reported by InsiderLouisville.com, is Jonathan Blue and his company. And if you go down there right now, you'll see that the windows in that Vermont American building have been decorated, so to speak, with artwork from a liquor bottle from Angel's Envy. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Angel's Envy was part of the sponsorship of this very Louisville.am party a few weeks ago. So I guess we're going to become fans of Angel's Envy. It'd be nice to have it. It'll be nice to have a tourist attraction right down there by the ballpark on the east end of downtown. And the announcement made was made, of course, by Mayor Greg Fisher. And just a little bit of announcement, if you're listening to this before Monday, July 15th, you might want to make plans. I am a part of a group that hosts an event called the Breakfast of Champions. Somehow I've become known more for the Breakfast of Champions than some of the other things I do. But we have a guest speaker once every 2 months, and this month it's a big one. It's Mayor Fisher is going to talk about his proposal for local option sales tax. And that's a big issue. A lot of people want to talk about. The mayor has chosen our group to discuss this issue with. So there should be a lot of folks there. We usually have about 50 or so at the University Club on the campus of U of L. There is a Facebook page if you want to read about it. It's at on Facebook. Just look up Breakfast of Champions Louisville, and you'll see the event. And you can RSVP and you can come. It's $15 cash for a hot breakfast. And we'd love to have you, and we'd love to have some guests that heard the podcast. And be sure and let me know if you decide, because you listen to this podcast, to come on down to the Breakfast of Champions. It is bright and early Monday morning at 7:30 a.m. I want to move on to another issue that caught my eye. A lot of people in the journalism community are talking about this week. And that is a marketing program at WDRB-TV. They have worked really hard to create this journalism brand, and they are airing a promotional spot to the effect that they will no longer talk or promote breaking news unless it's really, really breaking news. It's a unique approach, not just in Louisville, but in the country. It got the attention of NPR, which did a nice feature story on what Bill Lamb and WDRB are doing down there. It must be successful. If you don't know, down at 7th and Ali, they have embarked on an ambitious building schedule because they've outgrown their building. They're hiring reporters and other folks to expand their facility and produce more news. But the approach is not without controversy, and I've talked to some others in the industry and in town who have sort of made fun of the approach, that the criticism, I guess, the most frequent criticism I heard is it's really just a marketing strategy. And the criticism is that WDRB is just using a marketing strategy to criticize others' marketing strategy. So that's what is going on at WDRB, and they also have published a fairly interesting and unique contract with viewers. You can see this on their website. They've got 10 items that they are saying that they will and won't do as far as it goes with their newscasts. And the first one is, we'll not hype our product. Our promotions will always be truthful. We'll strive to present reporting that is bias-free. You know, it's really, there's 9 other ones, and you can look that up on WDRB's website, and you know, hold them accountable if you think they break any of those rules. My opinion is that, you know, in general, they do live up to what they say, for the most part. You don't see wild hype on there. Their weather meteorology department, for one, is not as excitable, and you know, they seem to show a little restraint as compared to their competition. So that's what's going on at WDRB. I got one more little thing to talk about. You know, this is my take on culture. I like to talk about books I'm reading, movies I'm seeing. This week I just finished the new Stephen King book, and it is typical Stephen King. It's a great read, a great summer read about a a young man coming of age, working in an amusement park. And, of course, there's some King-esque mystery and strange things that happen in the story. It's a great story. You can read it in a short time. The movie of the week, though, that I saw that's really interesting. I was watching the Bill Maher show on HBO, and one of the guests was Adrian Grenier, the star, if you remember, of the show Entourage. And he's promoting a movie he produced, co-produced, called How to Make Money Selling Drugs. And it is a amazing documentary. It chronicles different levels of the drug profession, not profession, but the drug world, and shows how it really is a how-to on how to make money selling drugs at every level. It does illustrate the risks, and in the drug culture, the reality is it's a very dangerous thing to do, but the reality is also there is a ton of money to be made. So it is a sort of a criticism of the drug laws in our country, and I think if you want to be well informed about that topic, this is an outstanding documentary. So that's my take on the news for the week. Right now, I'm going to introduce my next guest. I went down to the Wave TV studios last week and talked to the newest anchor, Shannon Cogan. You might remember her at WLKY in the late 90s. She was then Shannon Horry. She did morning news, and she's come back after several stops. And I'll let her explain to you why she's returned to Louisville after the experience of being in a really big time market. And it's really appropriate that we're doing talking to Shannon Cogan now. Wave is not the ratings king. They've been in last place in most ratings period as the last few ratings periods. Now it's July, and this is a ratings month, so be interesting to see if her addition is going to help Wave in the ratings. But I talked to Shannon about a number of different topics, and here's our interview.
I guess the first thing I want to ask Shannon is, you're coming home again.
That's right.
And we're glad to have you.
Thank you, Rick, and thanks for having me on your podcast.
Well, welcome.
This is my first podcast.
Wow. Well, it's only my second.
So this should be stellar.
That's right. We're old pros. Tell me what brings you back to Louisville? What made this decision happen?
It was a pretty easy decision, to be honest, because my husband and I have twin boys who are 4.5 years old. And we, as much as we love Miami and the people there, and we had such wonderful friends, we did not have any family members there. So with our boys growing up, they didn't have cousins to play with or aunts and uncles to put them on their lap. And my mother loved to spend time with the kids, and she had to get on a plane to come. And now she can drive. She lives just 4 hours away. And we're surrounded here by Kendall's family. And it's so we wanted the support system, and we wanted to surround them with people who care about them and who love them in a terrific community. I was very familiar with Louisville because I worked here from 94 through 98. But my husband, of course, is from Louisville. And so we would come back every single year a couple of times. And I've really come to love this city.
Okay. Well, great. Glad to have you back. Now, you were at WLKY then, and
I anchored the morning show.
And anchored the morning show. And
with Joe Orlando.
Joe Orlando. Now, there's a name from the past. You tell me about, 10 years, 15 years have passed. What are the big changes?
Thanks for pointing out the time and how much older I am now. But, I think so much has changed about Louisville. It was a great city when I was here. Valhalla was the big tournament just started, and but now you come back and there's this terrific new ballpark with the bats and a great place for kids to play and a wonderful place for families to go. And New Lou is so exciting with all the cute restaurants and shops, and they have and the arts community has really flourished, and there's so many tremendous art events and concerts, and KFC Yum Center, they're having the Eagles coming up this weekend. I'd love to go. There's just so much to do here, and it's, I think, a wonderful place to be, and you have a great city feel, but you still have some of the niceness of a smaller town. People are nice. The pace is a little bit slower, and all of that is terrific.
Okay, so that's a difference between Louisville and Miami. Now I always imagine that Miami News is all stories right out of a Carl Heisen novel. But
he's a great author. Yes.
Is crime the dominant story? How is the news media in Miami different than here in Louisville?
Well, when the Heat are not winning, we do often lead. You do often lead with crime, and we would always say in the newsroom, there's a Florida connection. There's got to be a South Florida connection to whatever story happened, wherever that story was. It might be happened someplace in Europe, and we'd say, okay, let's find the relatives of this guy who might live in South Florida. But there were some bizarre stories here. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's the same job that we have, and it's nice to be in a place where you're familiar with and you have the community support.
Sure. And I know some people might say that it's odd going from the number 16 market down to the number 48 market, but you're coming in as the top anchor. You're at 6 and 11, right?
Five, 6 and 11. But we have a wonderful staff here at Wave 3 News with people who have been in this market for years and years and years. And so while I'm doing those shows, we rely so much on the talent from our entire newsroom with Scott Reynolds, who has been here for about 15 years, and Don G, who's been here for 20 years, and mm-hmm. Connie Leonard and Kent Taylor and John Bull, who I used to work with at LKY. So I think it's a tremendous, talented group of journalists with many years of experience in this market and also outside as well. And I also worked in Dallas, Texas, which was a very large market too. And so it's nice to come, I think, and we all provide and offer something mm-hmm. different and unique insight into our product. And so it's good that we all come with different backgrounds.
Right. And now, I was reading some, of course, in preparation for this. Of course, I Googled you and learned that, number one, you're Asian American, which mm-hmm. makes you the first in this market, I think.
That's true. Right?
And that in Miami, you were involved in a lot of nonprofits, charitable activities. Are there any here in Louisville that you've sort of picked out, got your eyes on? You expect to do some of that?
Absolutely, because I think that is a huge and important part of this position. And you get this chance to reach out and really get to know the people and your neighbors and help make a difference on lives. And my husband and I, as I mentioned, Rick, we have twin boys who are 4 and a half. And our one little boy was born with a heart defect. And he needed open heart surgery when he was 2 days old. And when he was 3 weeks old, he suffered a cardiac arrest. And we almost lost him. And it was horrible. For 20 minutes, the surgeons were working to get his heart going again. But as a result of that, I've really learned just that there are so many tremendous groups out there who are helping families in need. And so especially nonprofit organizations that help children are mm-hmm. the ones that are closest to my heart. And I would really love to get involved with so many of them here in town. And we've actually... We're familiar with CoSare Children's Hospital because one holiday a couple years ago, my son ended up there for a week. So
really?
We've learned a little bit about CoSare, which is a wonderful hospital. And we're so fortunate to have really such great medical care in this town.
Sure. Well, I'm sure your phone is going to start ringing with people offering to have you MC events and all that. But I'm sure it's great to be back. Let me ask one other question about your media career. I know you've become an anchor and all that. Do you expect to do? Are there any kind of stories that you'll actually go out and do? And
you know, that's why we all get into journalism, is because you love to write and you love to tell stories. And so that's really what my true passion is getting out and telling stories. And so I hope to do a lot of different stories, whether it be profile pieces on people or maybe looking closely at issues. So absolutely. I mean, I've only been here since. Last Thursday was my first day on the job, so
okay.
Let me figure out where the coffee pot is, and then I'll love to get out there. So, but if anyone has any good story ideas, please let me know.
Okay.
Contact me. They can send me a tweet at Shannon Wave News.
There you go. We all want to be connected on social media. You know, the Rusty Satellite Show has all this stuff. So that's very good, Shannon, to let people know how to get a hold of you. You're going to be open to people, and we're looking forward to certainly seeing you on the air here at Wave.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to everyone watching, Rick. I'm counting on it.
You know, in my media critic position, I would talk to you about how Wave really needs that. And
all right, well, wait till this podcast is over.
There's some catching up to do, let's say it, Wave. But I think it's certainly a positive, move for Wave.
You know, we just had a new news director who started yesterday. His name is Bill Shorey. And I have to say, he had a meeting, and I am really excited about the momentum we have going and the future. And he just came and just, I think he really energized the room, and we're all really excited right now.
Well, is there anything we can expect to see on the air different at Wave other than you?
Well, I think you're going to see stories that people should know, stories that will make you laugh or make you cry or make you learn something. And stories that will help you learn about your community. And that's what we hope to do.
Okay. Well, I'll let you do that commercial. And that was fun.
Thank you, Rick.
The Shadow, that's all we got today on the Rusty Satellite Show. Thank you for spending a few minutes with me here at the Wave Conference Room.
Thank you.
We'll look forward to watching you on the air.
And this podcast was painless. It was terrific.
Well, good. It wasn't hard for me either.
All right. Well, thank you, Rick.
Well, a big thanks to Shannon Cogan and to J.K. McKnight for appearing on this episode of the Rusty Satellite Show. Let me remind you that I would love to get some feedback on the show. This is the third one, and we're having a lot of fun doing this, and I'd love to hear from you. You can reach me by email at rustysatellite@gmail.com. My Twitter handle is @RickyRedding, and you can look for pictures and other things of interest along the lines of what I talk about at LouisvilleKY.com. That's my blog site that sort of takes a look at things that are going on in the city. So until we come back next Thursday with a premiere of show number 4, this is Rick Redding for the Rusty Satellite Show.